Welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The U.S.-Israel war in Iran is changing the world on a scale hard to grasp. The international system is witnessing an extreme shock. The U.S. is experiencing a strategic defeat at the hands of a regional power. The world we once knew is quickly disappearing. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, Tariq Zerelmar in Istanbul. He's a historian and political commentator. And here in Moscow, we cross to Dmitry Babich. He is deputy foreign editor at Komsomolskaya Pravda Daily. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Tariq, let me go to you first here. We're seeing change on a scale that none of us have ever seen in our lifetime. And, you know, we all remember the end of the Soviet Union and the end of the Cold War and the advent of the unipolar moment. But this, that almost pales in comparison to what we're seeing now. We have very little time, so I want you to give us the main points. What are the biggest changes and transitions that you're seeing right now?
First of all, I think you're right. This is even bigger than what happened between, say, 1989 and 91. And the reason is quite simple, because then we had a bipolar system, in essence, right? Parts of China. We had a bipolar system, and one of the two poles dropped out in a very peaceful and reasonable manner, thanks to the Soviet Union, actually. But now we come out of a unipolar moment that has long passed, but we haven't really accepted that. And it is the power that claims unique supremacy in the world that is being weakened massively, right? So this is different again, and on a different scale, another order of magnitude. So the main points, I think the United States has now proven to everyone, it began in Ukraine, actually, but it's even more obvious that militarily they're weaker than we think. They have made an enormous mistake by actually demonstrating how many weaknesses they have, especially when they are challenged, or when they challenge indeed, far abroad and are dependent on the sea, which is, after all, always has been their big 40, the sea, controlling the sea, the sea lanes, bringing violence everywhere, projecting like nobody else, and via the sea. And the great symbol of that, of course, has always been the aircraft carrier. Now, we haven't seen an aircraft carrier sunk, but we have seen aircraft carriers basically neutralized, very clearly neutralized by standoff weapons that they don't dare approach anymore. So we have seen that the United States cannot defend primacy militarily, not if they're seriously challenged, because all honor to Iran, but it's a middle power. It's a very serious middle power. But if Iran can do this to Washington, then what can China do? What could a coalition of China and Russia, North Korea and Iran do to them, even with all their allies who are no longer reliable, because A, the United States are treating their allies like dirt now, and that may have been a big mistake. And secondly, the allies also are seeing that the United States is declining. Now, I know Dmitry needs to talk too. So one last point from my side, which is we also see, I think, the beginning of a great rift between Israel and the U.S. And that as well will redefine not just Middle East, Western Asian politics. It will redefine global politics. And that's a damn good
thing. And Tariq, at the tail end of that, it may redefine American domestic politics as well. That is very much in play here. Dima, on this program, and I'm very grateful to both of you, we've just discussed at great length the conflict in Ukraine. And, you know, while American and Western liberals try to differentiate them, I think we would all agree that there's a lot of commonalities here. And we constantly hear the Americans want a deal, particularly under Donald Trump, but they don't want peace. And that applies to Ukraine, and it also applies to Iran. And this is a part of the topology that I think Tariq is hinted at, is that, you know, there's a fundamental inability to manage a international system in which the United States has dominated for 80 years. Its toolbox is empty. Dima.
I agree with Tariq that major changes are taking place, in some ways similar to the events of 1989, 1991, but I would caution us, we should not repeat the major mistake which was made in 1991. Some people accuse Gorbachev of that, but I think that was the general mood in the country, at least in the Soviet Union, where I lived there as a young student. Basically, the problem was that the Cold War was not ended properly. There was no agreement signed. Mm-hmm. It was indeed a kind of deal, you know, and unfortunately, not in writing even, you know. It was an oral deal between Gorbachev and George Bush.
Which allows both sides to have radically different interpretations of what that deal was because it wasn't written down. Go ahead, Dima.
Exactly. And the problems we're having now, not only in Ukraine, but in many parts of the world, these are the consequences of the absence of agreement, of the agreement back in 1991. The problem was that, you know, the Soviet Union and later Russia continued to view itself as the victor in the World War II, which is true, but the West viewed Russia as the loser in the Cold War, even though in writing there was no paper saying Russia lost the Cold War. So in the same way, look how Trump is behaving now. He wants to have a deal with Iran, you know. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to have a written agreement that would...
he doesn't want peace. He doesn't want peace. It's so fundamentally important.
Exactly. You know, I would quote someone, it's not me, but I find this phrase very wise. Decent people make agreements and sign them with lawyers. Mafia guys have deals, and their deals do not mean that there is going to be peace between mafia clans. It means there will be peace until that peace suits, you know, the group mm-hmm. which is now dominating. And with Iran, I'm sure we're going to hear a lot of counter arguments now from Israel, from the United States. They would say that we're so technically superior, you know, Iran cannot do anything. Iran is not supported technically by other countries. My response is, you know, Clausewitz said that war is a continuation of politics by other means. Not even the most sophisticated weapons can make up for the absence of good politics, you know. We don't see good politics on the side of Trump.
Well, I would also say, I agree, Dima. I mean, and there's a moral dimension here, which I think is important, but we don't need to discuss it now. I mean, who's on the right side of history is very clear at this point here. But Tariq, you know, it's really amazing, a country that has been under extreme sanctions for decades, Iran, and it has been able to flip the tables on the United States and the entire Western world. I see that part of what we're seeing right now is the continued ending of American and Western colonialism that dates back 500 years. Because if you look at where Persia was, it was a dominating power, very much like China is reemerging. The Persian civilization is as well. It may not be, it's certainly not evident to people in the West because they don't have the historical breadth to understand what's going on. Tariq.
Yes, I can only agree. I don't know if Iranian intellectuals or politicians accept these terms for themselves, so I want to be careful. But I would say that Iran is definitely what's called a civilization state. Oh, it has a deep down civilization that roots this state. Plus, it has a demographic potential, it has enormous intellectual potential, as we see, because the way it is fighting is extremely smart. It has outthought its opponents, who are much stronger in some ways. And also it simply has enormous technological potential, which is another form of intellectual potential, right? And it has extremely high morale. You know, you, Peter, mentioned a moral issue, and I think it does exist, absolutely. But I think one can break that down to another level and say there's also an issue of this classical term of the military, the morale. And if you look at the things that are happening now in South Lebanon, where Hezbollah is shredding Israeli tanks, to me, that is a sign that the morale of the IDF, for one thing, is despicable, because this cannot happen if you have ordinary, courageous interaction between your tanks and your infantry. And if it does happen, it means your infantry is no longer working properly, and that can only be a morale problem. And I think very similar things are happening inside the American forces. I think we are now looking at morale decay, right, which is related to morale, but not quite the same. And it has gripped us. And it has not gripped the Iranians. It has not gripped the Chinese. We see in Ukraine that the Russians certainly don't have this issue. All these countries and societies have moral standing power, persistence. And I don't think the West has much of that, which is an enormous weakness going forward. Let me add one thing to what Dima was saying. I totally agree with everything about the importance of proper agreements and acknowledgements of actually what happened, right? But I think there's one other problem which makes me very pessimistic as what we will have to go through. That is that the Soviet leadership at its end, I understand that Gorbachev actually made horrible mistakes in his dealings with the West, but he was a deeply humane person. And the leadership around him as well was a humane leadership. They wanted the best as they could see it, also for the world. The US is completely different. We will look back to this moment and we will say, the abhorred Soviets actually knew how to end an empire in a reasonable and fairly humane way, but the Americans didn't.
Well, and this is so patently obvious right now, and this is what makes this conflict against Iran so bizarre to understand. You can't even apply common sense, is that you see rising powers, Russia, China, what are their priorities? Their sovereignty, their security, and the prosperity of their people. Dima, the United States and Western Europe are not working in those categories. It's really, you know, historians will ponder this. I've said repeatedly on this program that we need to integrate psychology into this because that's maybe the only way to understand it. Dima.
You are absolutely right. The United States and to an even greater extent, the European Union, are guided by ideology. Mm-hmm. And the ideology basically based on all realities that do not exist anymore. I mean, the demonization of North Korea, I think there is little doubt who was more economically successful after 1953. But the question is not who was right in 1953. The question is how do we reintegrate North Korea into the world economy? Yeah. And we cannot do it in the West Germany, East Germany way, because in a year, North Koreans will feel themselves second-class citizens in this unified Korea. So the only way to do it is via more cooperation between North Korea and China, North Korea and Russia. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with Iran. Iran was on the right way when it was attacked by the United States and Israel. Iran made every sign that it was ready for peace.
Yes.
You know, okay, they could not give up all on their rhetoric. But, I mean, look how more stupid the United States has become.
Well, when I mean, it's so patently obvious. I mean, you know, the United States was disingenuous and dishonest in a first round of negotiations, attacked. They went through the Iranians amazingly decided to do it again, and then they were attacked again. I mean, there's no moral foundation left here. You could say that about the Minsk process and then the Istanbul process when it comes to Ukraine. These people, you simply can't trust, and history will judge them harshly. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. All right, let's go back to Tariq. All three of us have been thinking about over the last 4 years the fate of NATO, whether the North Atlantic Treaty Organization is fit for purpose. And I think we're in agreement that it is not. But who would have thought it would be an illegal predatory war on Iran that would maybe determine the final chapter of NATO? Because what's going on inside NATO now is, well, it's absolutely publicly destructive. You have the newcomers like the Finns. I mean, it looks like they purchased a ticket by entering the alliance on the Titanic, okay? I mean, it's truly extraordinary, the squabbling here. No strategic vision right now. Europe is under enormous energy pressure, but the drive to get rid of Russian energy. I mean, these people are lunatics. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tariq.
Yes, all of this is true. But look, what worries me is that you said fit for purpose. What's the purpose of NATO? If you think in terms of its official purpose, namely defending Western Europe, right? That was the main purpose against a possible Soviet attack. Well, maybe deep down in the Cold War, there was such a thing for a while. But its real purpose, its genuine purpose, its much more important purpose has always been maintaining the American Empire by controlling Western Europe, right? So what about that purpose? Why the American Empire is ending? So that can't really work very well. And also it is now run by an extremely short-sighted, very strange clique of people. I mean, Trump, Hexes, Vance, all these types, right? They can't think, it seems. Otherwise, we wouldn't see this Iran war. And they are threatening to get out of NATO, right? And they think this is a valid threat that they can make towards Europeans. Now, the problem here is that I fear one scenario where NATO doesn't break down as it should go, but continues existing without the US. That is either without substantial US input, but the US sort of still be there, or really officially without the US, in which case the Germans and the French and people like that would take over its leadership.
And if you combine NATO more dangerous or less dangerous?
I think it would make it much more dangerous.
I agree.
Paradoxically, because first of all, it would be much weaker, and because the current governments in these states, this may change, but on current trajectory, these are extremely militaristic governments who have lost the ability to conduct diplomacy, especially with Russia, but also with everybody else. Because if you think about it, they can't even conduct diplomacy with the United States. All they have for the United States is conditionless surrender and submission. That's also not diplomacy. And all they have for Russia is conditionless absolute hostility. That's not diplomacy. They just can't do it anymore. And after this Iran war, there will also be a reinforcement of the drive towards national nuclear weapons. They may call it something else in Europe. They may call it European command, whatever. But there will be a further spreading, proliferation of nuclear arms in the world, including in Europe. So I fear a smaller NATO, a Europeanized NATO, and I don't think it would be any better. I think it would be even worse, to be honest.
You know, Dima, we're going into the second month of this irrational war that the West, and it's the West, okay, obviously it's the U.S. and Israel, but the West is going along with it as well. But this is, you know, making Russia great again. I mean, and, you know, look at the two major powers that will, quote unquote, benefit, and I say that, you know, with hesitation, is Russia and China. And they're sitting back watching the post-war World War II order, particularly the end of the unipolar moment. They must be, you know, befuddled by all of this. I mean, all of these institutions are being smashed and really at a quick pace here. And also the greatest strength that the United States had in that order was not really its military, it was the financial system. And now that is being severely challenged. I mean, you know, you have the Petro Yuan coming into being, and that has a knock-on effect on the American Empire. And also, look at all of the Persian monarchies. They were supposed to be protected. Why would the South Koreans feel protected? Philippines. We could go on and on. This craven war of choice is resetting the chess table here right now. And as I said in my introduction, it's very hard to grasp all of these things happening at the same time. And Russia is the great demonized by the West, is becoming a beneficiary of it. And there's an awareness of that, and it's short-circuiting their Russophobia. Dima.
Well, you are right that Russia and China are kind of sitting back looking at it, but we're looking at it with discontent and China especially, the Chinese are seeing this huge missed opportunity. You know, the Western world was a huge beneficiary of China's return to the world economy in the 90s, you know, in the 2000s, all of this cheap Chinese labor. You know, the South Korea, Japan, Arab monarchies, they felt themselves protected. Now we see how basically the presence of American bases is a danger. It's not protection.
It makes them targets.
Yeah, and look how quickly, you know, the United States are now moving their Patriot missiles from South Korea. Very soon they may be moving them from Japan. What about the demonization of China? We have been hearing from the United States, oh, China is expansionist. It may attack, you know, we need hard systems in South Korea. Why, if you need them there, why are you so easily moving them to the Middle East? And again, basically what we see is the Western world, including the European Union especially, they're acting in the interest of ideology, not in the interest of their nations. And that ideology is very crude. When Israel and the United States constantly refer to the phrases from Iranian leaders, death to America. Well, Khrushchev said, we will bury you in the 1960s during his visit to the United States. It was not the reason. No one in his right mind considered it to be a reason for attacking Russia. Maybe some crazy Russian immigrants.
That's one of the...
How much more stupid the West has become. It's just amazing, you know, how people do not grasp symbolic speech, metaphors.
Well, I mean, these people
are quite ideologies.
The meaning of that phrase, we will bury you, meaning that communism is more superior to capitalism, and that's why he said it. It wasn't a military threat or anything like that.
In the same way, death to Israel, death to the United States was not a real threat to these countries.
It was a very poor translation, okay? Tariq, what we all should be worried about, and given what Dima just said about how the West is ideologically driven, that's why we will see Donald Trump double down and go into some type of land war using ground troops. I cannot see it any other way. They cannot reverse direction. And because it is so ideologically driven, that exception will not be even considered. What do you think?
I can't say I'm sure. I think you're right in terms of here. I would actually refer back to what you said earlier. This is already beyond ideology. This is psychology, right? It's almost down to Trump's individual pathology. He's not a normal person. I think you're right that he could do something like that. And I think you're also right that we would be naive to think that he would be stopped. So there is also a systemic component where they don't only have a mad emperor in America, they also have nobody around him controlling him anymore in an emergency, right? A good political system can still do that. So he could. What worries me even more, to be honest, is a slide to the use of nuclear weapons, frankly.
You just read my mind. Exactly.
And Israel would be the one to carry it out. That would be my bet, right? And then we'd be in another very hellish type of world.
Yeah, but I mean, Tariq, we're going into an apocalyptic mindset right now. And we were all brought up thinking the unthinkable. Well, we're having to think about this. I do not think that would be decisive in this conflict.
No, that's not what I mean. That's not actually what I meant.
Go ahead.
What I mean is that if one state is allowed to cross that threshold to avoid a conventional defeat, that in a war that they themselves have started, this would be Israel's case, then we have set a horrific precedent. And it will reinforce two things. One is everybody will acquire nuclear weapons who can basically do it, and almost everybody can now. And the other thing is we will have a precedent for their fairly easy use, right? Ironically, this is what Western propagandists were claiming about Russia during the Ukraine war that is still ongoing, that Russia is so horrible, they could actually cross the threshold and use tactical nuclear weapons. Russia hasn't done it because it's functioning normally. But Israel is a case where I think they could do it. And that, of course, would open up this hell world. I'm not saying we would all end up in a big Mad Max explosion, right? That's not what I'm saying. But it would end up this new anarchy with weaponized nuclear states running all over the place. So that must be prevented in all cases, I believe.
And Tariq, I would say, for lack of a better word, there's a taboo about using them. But before this conflict is over, there will no longer be a taboo. It will be more thinking, not strategically,
which
you should be thinking about. You'll be thinking tactically about it. Dima, your thoughts.
Well, I would also turn to the problem of disunity of NATO. I mean, the language which Chancellor Merz used against France recently was unthinkable. You know, Macron, the French president, said, well, moving the aircraft carrier Charles de Gaulle to Eastern Mediterranean. And Merz basically said, well, when it's not a direct quote, but something like, when the French say something, it sounds grandiose, you know, but the reality is usually much more modest. You know, little by little, well, the West
I prefer French rhetoric to German actions. I'm sorry, maybe I'm just a Luddite here. Okay, go ahead. One minute, Dima. Yeah. Go ahead.
I will not quote what Trump said about his ally, the Saudi crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman.
Yes, you could have talked that way on this program, okay?
We have totally new level of diplomacy here. So it would be very funny unless it had been so dangerous. You know, the problem is, and here I agree with Tariq, basically, absence of diplomacy between MBS and Trump, that is funny. But the absence of diplomacy leading to the new use of nuclear weapons, that's not funny at all. And we see it all from the Western side. It was not Iran who started this.
Yes, exactly.
All right, gentlemen, buckle up and brace for impact, okay? This whole war of choice is far from over. I want to thank my guests in Istanbul and here in Moscow. And, of course, I want to thank viewers for watching us here at RTC. Next time, remember, Crosstalk Rules.